this is Patrick Bainey, and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about connections, international business, supply chains, and globalization. And I guess it should be about deglobalization these days as well, and the effects these have had on our life, our work, and our travel in recent times. In today's program, I'm joined again by my colleagues from the Supply Chain Special Interest Group of the Society for the Advancement of Consulting, to discuss the ongoing uncertainty and unpredictability of global events and their impact on supply chains, and what companies are doing to become more agile and resilient in response to these unforeseen events. So joining me today, we have Lisa Anderson, president of LMA Consulting, based in Los Angeles metro area in California. Welcome, Lisa.
Glad to be here.
David Ogilvy, principal at David Ogilvy Consulting in Brisbane, Australia. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Patrick. It's great to be here.
And Art Koch, president of Arthur Koch Management Consulting, based in Miami, Florida. Welcome, Art.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for having me. Nice to see everybody.
Nice to see you again, Art. Your surname, what's the correct pronunciation? I'm sure I got it wrong.
That's it. We actually say Cook, as okay, in Cook in German, but I kind of pronounce it by the region I'm in because they'll stick with them. There's the Cokes, the Koches.
Okay. Well, maybe a few comments from me first to set the scene. So as I said, the topic today is building agility and resilience for doing business in 2024 and beyond. And we're going to be talking about how companies are looking to build these qualities into their business and their supply chains as kind of baseline generic attributes in the face of events and shocks that can't be predicted and really can't be scenario planned, lots of them. So in recent years, we've seen a global pandemic. We've seen full-scale wars in Europe and the Middle East. We've seen tensions and saber-rattling in East Asia, extreme weather events all over the place, and some very strange referendum and election results around the world. So surprising events appear to be coming thick and fast, and it would seem that there's no going back to normal, nor settling into a new normal. It just seems like there's just not going to be a normal anymore. So how can companies best prepare and equip themselves to navigate this world, avoid threats, seek out opportunities to grow and prosper? And that's what we're going to be speaking about today. So Art, I might start with you.
Thank you.
So first, welcome back to the Interlinks podcast. It's been a while since we've heard from you on here.
Thanks for having me. So how do you want me to jump in? What's my perspective?
Okay, well, I'll give you a start. So I held a client event here in Ireland recently on this very topic. And some of the things that came up as ways to build agility and resilience included the following: insourcing, vertical integration, recruitment flexibility as regards gender, age, neurodiversity, and flexible working, leveraging automation and AI, dual sourcing, staff rotation, cross-training. So do any of those resonate with you? Are there any other measures that you're seeing? And do you have any other examples or anecdotes from your own practice?
Yeah, I think to me, one of the most important things is to, as much as you can, build and source local for the region you're doing business in. And it doesn't have, you know, it still can be a pretty big region. You could say, you know, you could say North America, you yeah. could say South America, you could say Europe. Do as much building and sourcing for that region that you're selling in. That way you work to avoid these extended supply chains that cause, as the supply chains extends, the variability and the probability of something can go wrong will go wrong, as we're seeing today. And then the other thing is invest in the long term. You know, I feel it takes two different skill sets for incremental gains versus step functional gains, and leverage your organization with the right people and reward the people that have those skill sets, and set it up to where when there's, you know, the issues that were all, that everything you talked about, that those are all being worked on, or as many of them that can be worked on as feasibly possible without having too many priorities.
How do you think the skill sets that are needed for this world we're in are different, say, from the skill sets that were needed 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago?
You know, it was a maintaining. Before, we were maintaining. Everything, you know, we're near zero interest rates. The world was all playing well together. Economies were all playing well together. So we were in this maintenance mode. And now we're no longer in a maintenance mode. You have to have people that are very, they can think on their own. They are creative and they are responsive. You know, they're, when something happens, they don't look at it like, holy crap, that happened again. They dig in deep and they go, how can we resolve this? People good with problem solving skills.
Mm-hmm. Okay. David, same question to you. Do any of those topics that came up in my event resonate with you, or do you have others? Do you have any examples or anecdotes from around the place?
Yes, I do, Patrick. In many ways, I agree with Art around the insourcing back into, sourcing back into your own home country and so forth. Unfortunately, in Australia, though, we have the challenge that we are a large country geographically, but we are a small country from a population perspective. And while there's a lot of reshoring going on around the globe in the bigger countries, we're struggling to do that. There's a lot of talk and a lot of government support around helping, about helping companies come back to Australia, but the reality is our market's just simply not big enough to support that. And you know, the big challenges for us are energy prices. You know, for all of the talk of renewal being cheaper and so forth, all of the evidence is that costs are just going up and up and up. And we've got a government in charge at the moment that's just arbitrarily putting wage prices up, and productivity is falling like a stone in this country. And you know, that's reshoring piece just is not going to be possible for us, because you know, there's just simply people won't pay the price that's required to build and make things in this country. Mm-hmm. So we have that challenge. I do believe that AI is going to have an impact. Exactly how yet, I'm not sure. But as the world gets to know how AI is going to work and what capabilities it has, where its strengths lie and where its weaknesses lie, that's still being determined. So that's a real state of flux. And so, but I also agree with Art around the self-sufficiency. I think companies need to become more self-sufficient.
Okay. It's interesting, this idea, as Art mentioned, region, but a region can be more than a country. So in the case of the US, you're probably talking Mexico and Central America and Canada, so that whole North America region. In your case, in Australia, the obvious, you've got a giant just north of you. There's recently been elections there in Indonesia. So that's a country of what, 270, 280 million, an emerging power, large economy. So both as a base for reshoring and as a market for exporting, how do you see that relationship between Australia and Indonesia in the future?
I think it's important, but you know, we've got to remember too that Vietnam's not that far away either, as are Cambodia and some of the other Asian countries. India's not that far really either. So they are all options for us to move out of China.
Okay. Same question to you, Lisa. Those topics that we raised, do they resonate? Do you have any others, any examples or anecdotes from your practice?
Well, I definitely concur that reshoring and nearshoring, like to Mexico as an example, are hot topics. You know, clients have realized that they can't afford to take on that much risk if they wish to stay in business. So they are actively, reevaluating, having backup sources of supply and reshoring. They're also, the smart clients are also leveraging systems and technologies. You know, there's a whole bunch of them that we could talk about, but, you know, AI, automation, you know, like loads of them. And so, and then from a people standpoint, there are, I mean, it's just a really big quandary to actually at the moment. There may be more people who are unskilled, but that's not what they need. What they need is people who are, who have some sort of, well, like manufacturing skills. They need planners, buyers. I mean, they need resources that have expertise. And what I'm finding at our clients is that there is just like some sort of a terrible brain drain going on. And if you throw anything into the mix, like a system upgrade or, I don't know, you know, bringing out some new technology, any of these things we've been talking about, reshoring, you know, any sort of complication at all, they like lose their mind. They just don't have the resources to do it. So it's highly problematic. The smart companies are going to figure out how they can bring, they can train people. They're going to appreciate the talent that they do have instead of like losing key talent. And they're going to, you know, make sure that they bring both the talent, the technology, and their strategy together. And of course, they also, and part of that is through like processes like SIOP, so sales inventory operations planning. It helps them to maneuver so they can like see forward, figure out what's coming and how they can, you know, how do they reallocate capacity among their sites? How do they stay flexible? You know, how do they get in front of changing conditions quickly? So that's, those are the things that come to mind.
It's interesting. I was listening to the American guy, I think his name is Peter Zion or Peter Zian. He's a geopolitics expert. And he was talking about the US and the growth of manufacturing in the US. So he was suggesting that the future of manufacturing in the US is going to be golden in a way. The future is rosy on one front, and also for Gen Z, because they're a smaller cohort coming through. So there's going to be great demand for their skills. So there's going to be low unemployment in that sense. And I know, speaking to you before, you've been flagging this issue, and it's happening in the US and other places, but you've been noticing it in the US and California in particular, lack of skills, even to do some basic things in, you know, planning and forecasting and stuff like this. So, and one of the things that came up at my event was this idea of recruitment flexibility, and maybe companies haven't gone far enough in their flexibility with regard to recruitment as they might with regard to gender, with regard to age, with regard to neurodiversity, which somebody brought up at my event, and with regard to flexible working. What do you think of that? What about the neurodiversity aspect of that?
I think that we're going to have to consider all sorts of different options and be more creative just across the board as far as hiring. Like, I definitely, you know, I meet with a group of CEOs, and generally speaking, like the heads of companies are interested in folks coming back to the office. However, that's not the same thing that the people who are going to be good are interested in. So it's not that you have to be like all remote or all in the office as an example, but there's some sort of a win-win that can work for everyone. And that's somewhat true across the board. You know, whether you're hiring people who are previously retired, or if you're hiring folks who are veterans, or, you know, just something, there's got to be different categories and creative ways to come up with the teams that you're going to need to be successful. You're going to have to provide, no longer can hire people who are already trained, that's for sure. So you're going to need to start to provide more training and education as well.
Art, do you see any baby boomers being tempted out of retirement to come back into the workforce?
Well, I believe I'm starting to see it. And the reason why I'm starting to see it is through some job applications that we're getting in when I review some of them. I don't review all of them, but I'm seeing a more of a senior group putting their name in. And I think that's very important because they're the storytellers. They have the long history of how to do things. They know how to weather things. And the younger generation needs some people to follow. But at the same time, when you go into so many businesses, every business I walk into within the planning function, purchasing department, whatever it may be, 80% of the team, and I'm trying to count numbers and think through it, 80% of the team is 50 plus years old, you know? And I feel we really need to spend more effort on telling people that and shifting their mindset on the fact that these manufacturing jobs are good jobs. They're a long-term career job you can have. They're challenging. They're exciting. And so many people, their parents told them not to go do it. I was one of them. You know, get out of manufacturing, go into healthcare because manufacturing's dying. And I stayed in manufacturing because I felt I was good at it. But, you know, we have to change our mindset on that as a nation. And I think it's not just here. I have friends and family in Europe and the exact same thing there, where they want to go into technology. They want to go into healthcare.
Finance.
Law. Pardon?
Finance.
Finance. Yeah. Finance. And, you know, there are the brains out there, but we have to let people know that it's not the old smokestack that you see on the news. You know, you walk into factories and they're like surgical rooms, many of them nowadays, with beautiful, you know, epoxied floors, clean machines, clean rooms. It's a different animal than it was 40 years ago.
Yeah,
not always, but it can be.
Many countries, industrialized countries, are facing even a bigger challenge than the U.S. because they're much more demographically challenged than the U.S. So countries that have a huge manufacturing tradition, like Germany and Italy, their demographics are really bad looking to the future. Yeah. So,
well, one of the things we haven't talked about is the negative growth rate of people having children. Who, you know, any developed country, there's a negative birth rate. So the size of the population shrinking. So, you know, that's a huge discussion.
Have any of you, David, have you, because one of the other things that came up was leveraging AI. Have you used AI yourself in your business? Have you played around with ChatGPT? Have you done anything with that? And what kind of potential do you see for it?
The first answer to that question is yes. I'm trying very hard to get my head around the best way to make use of that, in my own business, and then how other businesses can do that. I'm doing that in conjunction with some of my IT compatriots, so my own IT support company, for example, and other organizations, because, as you know, I work in the technology space around the ERP systems.
Mm-hmm.
So Microsoft's made this huge investment in ChatGPT. We're starting to see signs of them deploying that in their ERP systems. So there's some evidence of AI occurring in finance and operations and Business Central, which are the two key products that they produce. Everything I've seen so far is typical of Microsoft, particularly that their marketing leads capability. And it was all really inane type examples. And, you know, it really didn't add any value that I could see. But that's just yet. I still think it's a developing thing. This is why I'm just keeping my finger on the pulse and looking to jump when the time is right. These big organizations have a habit of blowing up these sort of the potential of these new technological breakthroughs more than reality actually delivers. I think blockchain's an absolute classic at that. I've been saying for a long time, blockchain is simply a solution looking for a problem to solve. And I haven't seen any value that it's delivered yet. In fact, I've seen big companies like our own stock exchange, Australian Stock Exchange, waste something like $450 million on a blockchain replacement project only for it to be scrapped. And wow. So, you know, I'm looking at AI with that lens on to say, you know, a skeptical lens, you know, but I still do believe it's going to add some value at some point, but I'm just not sure where yet.
Yeah. Okay. Another maybe more mundane aspect of creating resilience might be just having more stuff on hand in case something happens. So, you know, this kind of, rather than just in time inventory, having just in case inventory. Now, a lot of, when I speak to companies, they all kind of deny that that's what they're doing. But yet I'm seeing here in Ireland, inventory levels going up and up and up, ever more demand for warehouses, people building warehouses. So inventory levels have been going up because everything that's happened, whether it be Brexit, COVID, war and so on, it tends to drive that insecurity. So people are saying, okay, let me have more inventory on hand, or where I can get my hands on it at short notice. So I know inventory is a big part of what you think about a lot, Arth. What are you seeing on that front?
Well, I'll be scared if inventory goes up any higher. and the reason being is, while everything was transitioned to China, the world inventory went up, some cases 30 and 40%, and some places it doubled, depending on what the product was. And it's because of the length of the supply chain, and they had to build in all the nodes of transportation, all the nodes of scheduling, all the nodes of manufacturing, assembly, et cetera, et cetera. So it grew drastically from the 80s to where it's at today. So to put more into it, it's a knee-jerk reaction, okay? And that's run by CEOs and COOs not understanding the right questions to ask. And we have to train them to teach them what questions to ask and explain to them the importance of having high velocity of inventory and how do you achieve it. Because every place I go, there are certain critical parts that you have to have a lot of inventory on, you know, but there's also parts you do not have to be swimming in inventory, and understanding the difference between the two and the exposure on both of them. And lastly is how to build partners with the key critical suppliers where you practice postponement strategies. And not everybody understands how to, few people, let me not say not everybody, very few people or executives understand what postponement strategies are.
Okay. Could you enlighten us?
One of the simplest is working with a supplier, giving them a long range forecast and putting in a finished goods authorization for them to hold so much finished goods, work in process authorization, and a raw material authorization. All right. I work with companies every day that they send a PO to a supplier, and the supplier doesn't know if they're going to get another PO after that. And they've been dealing with the same supplier buying the same thing for 20 years.
Yeah. And this goes back to making really good use of your systems too, right? You got to have good, accurate forecasting over a longer horizon. You can run your MRP across that, and you can share that by supplier give them a 12-month visibility, a rolling 12-month visibility, and then you just execute on the demands that you got at the time. And depending on your contractual arrangements, you can just promise to buy maybe 30 days in advance. So that's your commitment, and they can then help themselves balance their production and have a product available for you.
Yeah, it's a heck of a lot easier to forecast how many pounds of copper you're going to use, how many pounds of styrene you're going to use over a year's period of time or on a monthly basis versus the exact component you're going to put it into. And
That's true.
And setting up companies to show them how to do that. And once they learn it and the light bulb goes off, they really get agile. But until that sinks in, they're stuck in the 1950s planning. And that's where Lisa and I, we've got bottles of wine over Zoom and cried on our shoulders about this discussion. You know, it's just where they're not investing. There's two things that happen. They'll invest in really good supply chain people that are degreed, they understand the processes, but they're not given the sandbox to play in to where they can learn how to do it. You got one aspect. then you have another aspect where people don't invest in people at all, and they feel they can, anybody can buy, anybody can cut a purchase order. I had a client once that their lead buyer at one time was the front receptionist, did not do good at that, went to another job, didn't do good at that, was the admin to the president of the organization, did not do good at that. And the president organization said, anybody can buy, put them, anybody can cut a PO, put them in the chair. And this person was spending somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 million a year was their spend.
Wow.
And, you know, and that's, you just have that stuff. And we got to be better than that.
Right. So, Lisa, when we talk about agility and resilience, we seem at least to be generally talking about spending, investing to create new resources, new capabilities, new skills, create reserves or buffers, even, you know, redundancy in the sense of having resources on standby just in case. So do you think, is this in conflict with the mantras of efficiency, lean, and sweating assets? Have you seen companies struggle with that kind of apparent dichotomy, or is it not a dichotomy at all? Can you have the one without losing the other? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think you can have both at once. And to some degree, like I was mentioning earlier, there's like if you have a sign up process, you can understand where to invest and where to, you know, where do you really need to focus attention? But I think it is going to be more challenging than it was in the past. So, you know, you have to be smarter. You can't, like Art said, it's not as simple. Not that it was ever easy exactly, but it's not that simple anymore. Like you really have to pay attention to, you know,
you need to be a lot more discerning and a lot more strategic about where you put the extra resources and where you drive efficiency and all of that.
Right. That's right. I mean, it's overall, it is going to require more cash overall. I mean, you know, it's some of it's capital, right? So it depends on where you're getting this cash, but you are going to have to invest. You cannot just get away with, you know, not investing anymore. That is accurate. If you want to stay in business long term and grow and be agile. On the other hand, you can, you know, there are many ways where you can gain some real efficiencies. You can minimize your labor costs, like Art, what Art was just talking about, as far as you know, forecasting from a commodity standpoint, really, and setting up a relationship with suppliers. You know, that's one of the outcomes of a SIA process. And I've had clients that, you know, improve their margin pretty significantly, 5% and greater, simply by doing that type of a process. So you certainly can increase your profitability that way. With that said, it's not as though that's going to, well, I mean, it'll fall to the bottom line, but you're going to have to use it to invest if you want to like be successful.
Yep.
Because you're going to need people and you're going to need other things.
Okay.
You only need people while you don't have automation. And I think that's where a big part of the shift is going to come from.
I think this one's going to need a part two, guys. The clock clock is against us. We're going to have to pull the curtain down on this one and maybe have a part two next month on this one. So it's been great to have you all again, particularly to see Art back after such a long break. So thanks.
Thank you, Patrick.
Very good.
And thanks also to our listeners for tuning in again today. And be aware that if you enjoy this episode, you can find the full series of over 140 episodes of Interlinks on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, and other major podcast platforms. So until next time, keep well and stay safe.